On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, it is part three, the final installment with Gavin Shaw of Locked On Knicks ranking NBA teams by their futures. In this podcast, we're going to go through the top 11 teams on Gavin's list. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back in Locked On Nets. Just to catch you guys up if you haven't heard, this is part three of a three-part podcast series, I guess, with Locked On Knicks co-host Gavin Shaw. The first two parts came out earlier this week, so make sure to listen to those if you haven't. Gavin and I recorded this a week ago, Friday of last week, basically ranking all 30 NBA teams by their future outlook, their future prospects. This was obviously recorded before the season was suspended, so keep that in mind when listening. And yeah, without further ado, here is the conclusion of the trilogy.
All right, and let's get into another tier. I have my next, I'll say the next four teams belong in the same tier. The extremely talented and semi-dysfunctional Al Horford-ridden Philadelphia 76ers. Denver, who has Nikola Jokic, but I don't really trust them. Miami, who does not have the same amount of talent as really you can go back to maybe the Pacers until you have a team with, like, I would say, like, the current star power and, like, the future asset combination that, like, they should have, like, they should objectively be about 16th. But I love the infrastructure they have there. I love the culture, and I think they are a great candidate to get a star free agent. And then the Raptors, who are just operating on as high a level as any organization that we've seen, I think, since the Spurs a decade ago. I'm pretty comfortable slotting them in at eight. What do you make of that glorious foursome?
Yeah, the Philly thing is crazy. That, like, I don't necessarily disagree with them being where they are in the rankings, but just considering that they have, like, Simmons and Embiid, like, yeah. I would think that they should be much higher. And maybe they should swap with Miami in these rankings, but I think what you said about Miami is true, that they've definitely built, like, a real culture there, and with, like, a few minor exceptions, like, pretty much everyone who goes there plays better. Jimmy Butler seems, like, very happy playing there, and they've got young talent. They've got guys like Tyler Hero, Kendrick Nunn, Bam Adebayo. Like, they've got a young group, and they've also got, like, a Jimmy Butler, Iguodala, like, older group also. So they're kind of doing what the Celtics tried to do a couple years ago, where you have almost, like, two teams in one, which definitely makes me believe in, like, the long-term sustainability, where, like, maybe once Jimmy Butler kind of ages out, maybe it's not, like, a seamless transition to, like, the Bam Adebayo generation. Maybe there's, like, a year or so in between. But I think they're definitely built for, like, success now and success later. So no problems with them there. Denver's interesting too, because it seems like they've been a trade away for a few years now, and they made a trade, but not really one that was, like, super impactful. I think Michael Porter Jr.'s health will be huge in terms of, like, what their upside winds up being. Gary Harris has looked not good this season, and I think they wanted him to be good. You know, I would assume that. So that's not good. Jamal Murray still kind of a little bit inconsistent, but I do kind of trust him at least to handle the ball in big moments in playoff games. But yeah, they have Jokic, but I don't know if his game translates super well to the playoffs. Like, he had a great series against Portland and, like, against the Spurs last year, but just having, like, a center as your best player is kind of, it worries me a little bit.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think it's hard to build around. He's so unique, and that's his greatest strength, but it's also really hard to build around. And again, in my small ball apocalypse future, I this is also something I was talking about last podcast. I think there's a scenario where someone like Jokic it's interesting how, like, a few years ago we saw a world where Enes Kanter couldn't survive in competitive basketball situations. And I really want to get Denver, Houston in the playoffs because I want to see how Nikola Jokic does in that scenario. And I think offensively, he's a total monster, and maybe he's averaging 40 points per game. But is it a situation where you end up trading twos for threes and that doesn't work long term? That really interests me. Quick tangent. How do you feel about the Bam Adebayo generation as a band name?
That's pretty good. That's solid.
Pretty good, right? Can you see that on a t-shirt and just like a big of like Bam with like platinum blonde, like flowing hair, like screaming into a microphone? I don't know.
I just, you could put it on a tote bag and it's like Bam Adebayo generation, BAG bag. You know?
Oh, wow. That's really good. I'm going to delete this from the podcast. Go to the patent office with a mask on and just get it done. Philly. If you just like took Al Horford off this roster, I think I would have them maybe up to six. I think that contract was such a fucking disaster. I think it really, I agree with what Max Kellerman went on Woj's podcast. And he's look like Philly had like three or four titles won and they blew it with the way they've handled all this. Like you go back to like, obviously this is revisionist history. And like, I don't know if anyone would have done it at the time, but they just take Tatum with what Tatum is now. Like that's like Simmons, Tatum, Embiid. That's the next 10 years of NBA basketball. And it's pretty analogous, I think, to what Oklahoma City had. And in some ways even better because of the two-way potential of those guys. You could argue all three of those guys are top two or three positional defenders at their respective spots in the NBA. And like, I don't think anyone would have beaten them. But even with blowing that, there were so many configurations of this roster that could have been really great. I think they probably should have kept Robert Covington with what we see what he's doing in Houston now. And at the time, like trading for Jimmy Butler was the right move. But then if they got him, like I wouldn't have minded if they ran back last season's team. I know there's some debate over whether or not they actually offered Butler the max versus Butler just insisting that he wanted to go to Miami, which clearly has worked out beautifully for him. And Butler and Brett Brown had some issues. But that team was really good. They were better than Toronto when Embiid was on the court. And he was sick for a lot of that series. Granted, I guess Embiid's health should always factor into this equation. But there's a real case to be made that was the best team in the NBA after Golden State's injuries last year, and they couldn't keep that team together, and instead they signed Al Horford in this sort of misguided attempt to stop Giannis. And I mean, I'll come out and say it, I totally bought in. I thought it was brilliant. I'm like, okay, they're going to shut down Giannis, they have the weapons to beat Milwaukee, and the rest of this roster is just going to be overwhelmingly dominant defensively, and none of that has come into play. They, I think, have some real injury concerns down the road between Simmons and Embiid. I think those two can be great together, but they obviously don't optimize each other. And then the rest of the roster is just sort of fine. It's good. Like Milton and Korkmaz go off every couple of games, but there isn't that one young piece there outside of those guys because they traded away Landry Shamet, who, frankly, I wouldn't straight up take over Tobias Harris, but at their respective contracts, like I would sort of rather have Shamet and the Miami pick and the other pick that they had versus having Tobias Harris on this team. And maybe that's too much of a diss at him. Like he's had a good season, but I think they've totally blown what was sort of the best future in the NBA. And maybe I'm punishing them too much by having them at 11. Like I think looking at it again, they should maybe be ahead of Denver, but I don't know. I don't love their future, honestly.
Yeah. When you mentioned Tatum, I was just thinking about like a fantasy world where they took Tatum, they kept Butler, and they had a lineup of, like, Butler, Simmons, Tatum, Thybulle, and Embiid. Just, like, how incredible that would be defensively.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about them is, like, I feel like they don't put any of their best players in the best position to succeed. Like, they cramp Embiid's spacing by giving him Simmons, and same thing vice versa for Ben. And then for Tobias Harris, like, they make him kind of like a secondary playmaker. They give him, the ball on post-ups when there's like two guys like also in the paint. Like I think he's played well in his role, but I don't think it's like necessarily maximized what he can do. Josh Richardson has been kind of in and out of the lineup this year. I kind of want a little bit more from him offensively and taking some of the playmaking. But like at the end of the day, it comes down to the fact that like Simmons can't shoot, Embiid can barely shoot, and like those two guys are so good that you need to have them on the floor. But if you have two guys on the floor who either can't shoot or are like not good shooters, like you're not going to be like one of the best teams in the NBA. Like you'll be very good. You'll win a lot of regular season games. You're not going to be one of the like teams that makes the finals. And they have so much talent that they were almost able to do it anyway last year. But like we saw it with Houston, like they had to trade Capella because they couldn't play him and Westbrook together, basically. And I think that was the right move. And I think I've kind of thought for a long time that, like, you can make Simmons and Embiid work together. But at this point, like, it seems like maybe they don't get better when a guy's out of the lineup, but they don't really miss a step either when one of those two guys is out.
This is going to sound like a hot take, but I think it's right. They would be better this year with Nicolo Melli on the roster versus Al Horford. They would just be better. Because the thing is, like, people don't realize how much of an amplifying effect shooting has. And it's great. Like, I mean, I think this is like a case that Elton Brand, or maybe people who work for him, like, maybe shouldn't be a general manager. Maybe he got that job a little bit too quickly. And like, I hate to say that because I honestly like the ambition of what he tried to do last year with Butler and Harris, but it was Al Horford. Like, I thought it was so clear in Boston that he's sort of like a fake floor spacer. And Zach Lowe's points out time and time again, the range where he's comfortable are long twos. And like, if you have, and that's fine. If they had a point guard who was a really high level shooter, or if you just like you swapped out Simmons for Bradley Beal, like maybe that works, and maybe the spacing around Embiid works. But with their current infrastructure, the idea that you could bring in Horford and that would all fit together, in retrospect, I mean, again, I was buying into it at the time, was nuts. And they would be better off with just sort of like your stretch four. I legitimately think that would make them quite a bit of a better team. And I guess, I mean, yeah, I'm saying all this and you can ask why you still have them so high, because I think Simmons and Embiid at their best are top 10 players in the NBA, 26 and under. And the fact is, those guys as assets, you still have that final pivot where you decide to trade one of them. And maybe it's Simmons for Brad Beal in a straight up type of trade. And all of a sudden you still have one of the better infrastructures and one of the better 1-2 combos in the entire NBA. If you actually gave Embiid a talent of that caliber who also complimented him.
Yeah, and speaking of Melly, like, his teammate JJ Redick, they let him go too. Like, they kind of get rid of all their shooters. They got rid of Redick, they traded Shamit, they traded Dario Saric, a stretch big. Like, they got rid of all of the guys on the team who could shoot, and they kept the ones who couldn't, kind of.
Yeah, no,
weird move.
Right, yeah, it doesn't make sense. So Denver, I think I just want to clarify the reason I have them at 10 is because I love Michael Porter Jr. And I think you're talking about 1-2s going forward, like the combination of him and Jokic. I think that's a borderline, like, if I could just have two guys like that. And again, the health issues are real. Some of the stylistic concerns going forward in the league are real for Jokic, but Jokic was for real last year in the playoffs. Like, as much as you were just talking about how, like, you got to say Portland, at the end of the day, they made the conference finals. Like, Jokic was outstanding in that series. So I'm a big believer in him. I'm a big believer in Porter. Miami, I made the case for. Let's move forward. Another team that's sort of in their own tier, I'm going to say Toronto. And I think, to me, this is sort of a case of organizational stability and what they've built. You can make a case Nick Nurse is one of the 3 to 5 best coaches in the league, which would have sounded crazy a year ago when there were still some questions about him, but I really believe that, and his adaptability is impressive and maybe a product of his relative inexperience, but it's really, really exciting. And then their roster just has a little bit of everything, and it doesn't necessarily have the assets or the sheer star power of a Philly or an Oklahoma City for the assets portion of it. But I like every part of that team. They keep finding young guys who are good, like Matt Thomas. Oh, seems like he might be decent. Terrence Davis. I'm just like, these are just guys on the back end of the roster that like just seem like NBA players. And you put that around a guy who I think is a credible star. I don't think Pascal Siakam is ever like a top six guy in the league, but if he's somewhere between 15 and 7, and you have a great infrastructure rotating around him, it almost reminds me of what the Spurs had going post Duncan and Ginobili being in their primes, where they built around Kawhi for that one season. And I do think that's kind of a sustainable model with maybe a little bit less upside, just in the sense that Siakam, I don't think, is quite Kawhi, but I think they're going to be really good for a long time.
Yeah, they've got a whole like roster of guys who like could win most improved player of the year. Like, Fred VanVleet has taken a huge leap this year. Siakam like could honestly win it again this year. And yeah, they've kind of done similar to what I mentioned with Miami and Boston a couple years ago, where they've got like multiple teams in one. Like, they've got the Lowry, Ibaka, Gasol group, and they've had a lot of injuries this year, so like they haven't had everyone at once, kind of, but they've got that group, and they've got the VanVleet, Siakam, OG Anunoby, who's been really good this year. Like Chris Boucher out of nowhere has been really good. Like they have a ton of guys, and yeah, they are kind of just like a rich man's version of Miami, Indiana, like that type of team. Like this is kind of like the best version of what those teams can be, unless those teams like Miami get like another star in there. I am still a little bit worried about them in the playoffs. I think Siakam, as great as he is, and he's literally probably my favorite player in the league, I don't trust him down the stretch to hit a big free throw, like that kind of moment. I still don't trust him. And I think Van Vliet, I actually do trust to be that guy. So maybe it just becomes that Van Vliet is like more so the closer down the stretch of games, and Siakam kind of like keeps them in at the first 3.5 quarters. Maybe that's the recipe, but there is part of me that like just still is like, they can't be this good. Like this can't be for real without Kawhi, you know?
Yeah, I think, and now I think that that's a real point. And it's one of those situations where it's like, all right, let's see how it translates to the playoffs. And I think it's also, it's an off-made point, but teams who play hard for full games every game in the regular season have a little bit less upside in the postseason when everyone is doing that. And I think that's not something I came up with. That's something Zach Lowe says a lot. That's something a lot of really smart NBA guys say a lot. I think it's applicable to Toronto. I think their upside is curbed a little bit by that fact, and like, and the fact that they, after the first round, they probably won't have the best player in most of their series. You just can't help but commend them on what they did last season in terms of the overall roster. And just the fact that, I mean, it sort of struck a chord with me when you were talking about Van Vliet being that guy who could close in the playoffs, because I was thinking, oh, I mean, that's sort of who Lowry was for them a year ago, especially mm-hmm. in that last game against Golden State. And it's just amazing that they built this team last year that was good enough to win a title, while simultaneously they had understudies for their two best players. Like Van Vliet was like Lowry reincarnate. I don't know if he's going to be quite as good as Lowry, but a lot of the same qualities. And Siakam was sort of Kawhi-lite, and they just kind of have that next man up where those guys can do that down the road. And it's this self-sustaining system that, again, is just very, very similar to what we saw from the Spurs. All right, Marcus, I've talked enough. So I'm just going to throw, I think, two more tiers left. We have 7 through 4 and then a pretty clear top three, even though I had the third team at 5 about 10 minutes before this podcast. But pretty clear top three after thinking about it. I'll just let you go over these in any order you want. I have the Clippers at 7, the Lakers at 6, Boston at 5, Golden State at 4. How do you feel about that?
I feel mostly good. I think I would maybe switch Boston and Golden State, but I definitely agree. I think the Clippers, I think they'll win the title this year, so maybe that's an argument that they should be higher. But at the same time, I think they have the least long-term stability of that group of four, so maybe that's why you have them there. And but then again, like the fact that they will, I think they'll win the title this year means that those other three teams like have to win titles in the next like X amount of years to justify yeah. being ahead of them. And maybe that'll happen, maybe it won't. But for the Clippers, like George and Kawhi could very easily leave in a year and a half, and that would be a disaster. Or if they stay, like those guys aren't super young. Like I don't think that their window will last very long. So I think that them being at the bottom there makes sense. For the Lakers, LeBron is obviously still LeBron right now, but you can't expect it to go on forever. But at the same time, they have Anthony Davis, who is probably the best bet, or one of the best bets, I would say, to be like the best player of the 2020s. So they should be like still good and in contention for the next decade at least. Boston, they've got Tatum, they've got Brown, they've got multiple guys similar to what I've been saying kind of throughout this podcast. They've got two teams in one with that Kemba group also, that Kemba Hayward team. And then also like the Brown Tatum team. So they've kind of maintained that flexibility. I don't think that they will make the finals this year, maybe not next year, maybe not for the next couple of years, because they've got Milwaukee in their conference also. So I think a lot of their fate is kind of tied to what other teams do. And then for Golden State, kind of they still don't have like any young pieces right now, unless you really believe in Wiggins. So I think that next year they will be in the contending picture. I think they'll kind of be in that like 3 seed kind of range, and I think that they'll definitely like put a scare into a lot of these teams up top. I don't know if I see them winning another title though, is my only thing, which is why I might put them below at least Boston.
Yeah, my case for Golden State's actually the one out of these four I kind of feel the strongest about, even though, again, I had them behind Boston 10 minutes before the podcast. I kind of do think that next year they'll be a title contender, and maybe especially the year after that, just because I think there's very clearly another move to be made for them. You package Wiggins' contract, and I mean, it's possible they're faking it, but they seem like they genuinely like Wiggins and they like what he brings. And we've seen this show from Wiggins before where he's in a pseudo new situation in Minnesota. It was like when a new like front office would come in or a new coach would come in and he'd play well and then it would fade off. But in Golden State, like, I mean, watching him last night, like he looked like he's playing hard and he looks like, and they've talked about how surprised they were with his passing, like a guy who even in Minnesota with limited weapons around him averaged 5 assists per game. And granted, you have the ball in your hands as much as he does. Like that's going to happen even if you're not a great passer. But I think with like loaded, like the two greatest shooters of all time, like guys like Curry and Clay pairing with him, it sort of creates a runway for him to really leverage his athleticism in what I think could potentially be a really dangerous way and turn him into sort of a hyper-efficient third option. But then the alternate scenario, and maybe the even more appealing one for Golden State's long-term future, is he's a big contract that is maybe some teams would call an albatross, other teams would, especially if he rehabilitates himself in Golden State, would look at as an asset. You have what's going to be, as of now, a guaranteed top five pick in next year's draft. And then I think the pick that they got from the T-Wolves, I think people are underrating it, honestly. It's going to be I'd be shocked if it's not a top 10 to top 12 pick in a draft that's supposedly going to be significantly better than this one. So you combine those three assets, and there's a real world where I don't know if that gets you a Brad Beal-level guy, but something close to that. And obviously, like, here's the thing. Like, you scour the market right now. There's not an obvious case of, oh, that guy's available. But things change quickly in the NBA, and there's a world where Chris Middleton is all like Giannis wants to leave, and all of a sudden Milwaukee's like, okay, let's just go all youth, and Golden State ends up with Chris Middleton. Again, not that exactly, but something like that could happen, and I think they have a lot of different avenues to either acquire a fourth star or build a really great infrastructure around Steph and Clay. Between Draymond, Wiggins, the pick this year, the pick next year, and they've gotten a full year to do essentially what Philly did and just mine the NBA for uncut gems, for lack of a better term. And someone like Damian Lee, who had a great game against Toronto last night before blowing it down the stretch a little bit, that's potentially an asset in the playoffs next season. So I just think they have the most complete future of any of these teams. The Clippers, I think you make a good. Joe, sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
On the Warriors, I'm gonna pull Joel Embiid and do a 180 real quick. I completely forgot about the picks. That's a great call. They've got their own pick and the Minnesota pick either next year or the year after. Those are two great assets, and I mentioned that I didn't think that they had any young guys. They've got two potentially if they draft well. So
yeah.
Yes, they should be the top of this group.
Okay, that was very big of you. and then the rest I think is pretty, I think the only reason, just to clarify, the Clippers at 7 is like, I just think the potential for Kawhi or Paul George to suffer like a semi-catastrophic injury is there. Like Kawhi's sort of been, it's weird because you can also argue he's the best player in basketball, but I think at the same time, it's almost kind of been on life support the last two seasons in terms of like, not that he is fragile, but how teams have to sort of treat him that way. And I don't know how degenerative his leg condition is and if it's going to get a lot worse. But I just think there's a world where him and George, or just even if it's only one of those two guys, aren't the same dude going forward. And they put all their eggs in that basket. And maybe someone else will look at the team and say, hey, that's not true. Like they built this great roster. Look how good they are defensively across the board. They have, like you talk about, two teams. They have this whole bench unit, in a different way, not in terms of age, but just in terms of style, with Lou Will and Montrezl Harrell that they can pivot to. Like there's so many different options there. But all those guys outside of Harrell, who I think is sort of hit a ceiling a little bit, are on the older end. And I don't think it's not like a situation where, like Boston, where if someone like Hayward falters, you can say, all right, Jaylen Brown, we need you to do a little bit more. Hey, Tatum, we need you to keep playing like an MVP. I just don't think they have the pivot that those other teams do. And for the Lakers, I just think Anthony Davis is the surest bet to be good for a long time out of the four stars on those two teams. And honestly, I would sort of bank on LeBron's health, even though he's like 4 or 5 years older, maybe even more so than Kawhi. And like, clearly he's going to fall off faster in 2 years. Like you'd be surprised if Kawhi isn't the better player, But I just think there's less potential for something really awful to happen to LeBron than Kawhi. And maybe that's misguided because LeBron has played the most significant minutes total of any player in NBA history. What he's doing is totally unprecedented. We don't really have a track record for a guy being this good for this long. But I maybe it's wrong, but I kind of believe in him and the Lakers because of it more than the Clippers.
Yeah, he's shown us no reason to doubt him or his health, whereas Kawhi and George especially, who's had like a lot of different types of injuries, they've both been kind of banged up.
Yeah. All right. Top three. And again, I'll just sort of we had a spirited debate in our group chat about Milwaukee being higher. I initially had Milwaukee at five, and I think a friend of the show, Jeremy Kaplett, whose research I'll reference in a little bit if he's listening, would have maybe put them at one. But I have Milwaukee three, I have Dallas two, and I have New Orleans at one. I'll send it to you. What do you make of that?
I don't remember if I said this in the chat specifically, but I think Milwaukee should be number one. Just the fact that so those three teams basically they're buoyed by Milwaukee. You've got Giannis and like a bunch of guys who fit around him really well. Dallas, you've got Luka, and then to a lesser extent, KP. New Orleans is Zion. And then you've also got guys like Brandon Ingram, Lonzo, Josh Hart, like a good young group besides just Zion. So I believe in Giannis more so than anyone on those other teams just because, A, he's shown it. He's won an MVP award. Physically, he's never had any kind of like injury issue. He's never missed time or missed games or anything like that. And also the Bucks have kept him on a really low minutes total. They've allowed him to sit a lot of fourth quarters, that kind of thing. So it's not like he's playing a ton, despite the fact that they're winning a ton. He's actually like, he's resting. He's saving himself for the playoffs, that kind of thing. And then for Dallas, like Luka has had an ankle thing twice and he's not the same two-way player that Giannis is. And he will never be the same two-way player that Giannis is. He can probably and arguably already has become a better offensive player. Or at least a more versatile one. But in terms of defensively, I would much rather have Giannis. KP obviously has injury issues. And Zion has a ton of injury issues. And there's questions, in my mind still at least, about his offensive game. I think it's still pretty one-dimensional. And it's an incredible dimension. Like, he's the most physically imposing player in the league, like, since prime LeBron, probably. But I don't know that I trust it in the playoffs just because it seems like his move a lot of times is just like pounded into the ground back in and just like go over the top of someone. Then if he misses, just jump over them and get the offensive rebound and put it back in. And I know that teams are like already sending double teams at him. Like, he's not being defended like lackadaisically or anything like that. But the fact that they didn't win anything without him and even with him are kind of like a 500 team. And I know he's just a rookie, but the injury concerns, the lack of the fact that he hasn't like shown it to me to the level that a guy like Luka has, I might even put I think I would put New Orleans second, actually, ahead of Dallas still, just because of the depth of their talent. And I do believe in Ingram if they're able to re-sign him, though that would kind of limit what they can do going forward. I just think that Giannis, the only question is if he stays in Milwaukee, but beyond that, they have him, they have kind of the perfect team around him. Like, they're is almost no doubt that they will be in the finals this year and for like the next couple of years in the conversation for that.
Yeah. I mean, and that's my whole argument. Like, if Giannis signed a 5-year contract tomorrow, they'd be two, maybe one, probably they would be one, because that's, I think people underrate what they're doing. They're legitimately one of the five greatest regular season teams in NBA history. And the scary thing again is that they're doing it without pushing their stars. Like, even Golden State, with how loaded they were, like, their stars had to like really strain themselves throughout the regular season to get to 73. And granted, I don't think Milwaukee would probably finish around 67 or 68 in terms of wins. But they're dealing with Giannis playing 30 minutes a night. Chris Middleton in and out of the lineup playing 32. Without Giannis, like, this generational guy on the floor, they're plus six. So clearly they have this infrastructure that works beyond Giannis. They have a brilliant coach in terms of Mike Budenholzer. But my two big concerns with them are far and away the biggest is that Giannis could potentially leave. Marcus, I know this would sway you if you had heard it, so I was waiting until now to tell you. Stephen A. Smith, the credible NBA reporter, said on his program today that he's hearing that Giannis could leave if the Bucks don't make the finals, or that he's gone if they don't make the finals. And he said after, quote, "I'm not sure if that's true, but it's what I'm hearing." So Stephen A. Smith, as you know, occasionally makes appearances in my apartment building, so I'm prone to trusting him. That's a real thing. You can slide into my DMs if you have questions. But yeah, that's number one. And two, I think Milwaukee with Mike Budenholzer is ahead of the curve stylistically in the NBA. It's sort of like what we saw from Tom Thibodeau in the late 2000s defensively, sort of what we've seen from the Houston Rockets in terms of shooting a lot of threes, where I think Milwaukee, in terms of how they play defense, like really packing the paint and having high-level athletes who can fly around and still get decent contests on threes, but that's really the one thing they give up, and they don't give up anything inside. It's led to them having the best defense in basketball, and granted, like, not everyone can replicate no one can replicate Giannis, and there aren't that many rim protectors on the level of the Lopi. So that's certainly, there are unique elements to what Milwaukee does, but I think you can recreate it, and I think the advantage they have over the rest of the league in that capacity should diminish over time. That's a very small thing, but we're on to the top three, so I'm picking nits a little bit. Dallas, as I point out in our group chat and was thoroughly rebutted on, greatest offense in NBA history in terms of offensive rating, and they're doing that led by a post-tween in Luka Doncic, who just turned 21 years old. I think that's incredible, and the fact that they've I think their front office is operating at one of the higher levels in the NBA, that out of the bargain bin, they've sort of built this perfect team around Luka. Like, someone like Seth Curry is looking like one of the better role players in the NBA. Dwight Powell was in that conversation before he got hurt. Maxi Kleba's really good on and off. And they just have all these pieces that just make a lot of sense around their two guys. And KP, I was arguing this on Locked On Knicks, even when he wasn't playing well, he's such a perfect piece around Giannis because he could protect the rim on defense, and you have to guard him on the perimeter on offense, even when he's not hot. And as he continues to get healthier, we're seeing flashes of the guy he was in New York. And look, he's the ultimate injury red flag, even more so than someone like Embiid. He's never, ever finished a season. And we're going to find out in the next month or so going into the playoffs whether he can do that for the first time around this time. But I just think they have maybe a top 15 player down the road in NBA history. I believe Luka's that good, and the perfect team around him, and they're all pretty young, and they have a top 5 or 6 coach. And that pushes them ahead of Milwaukee, just given the uncertainty around Giannis in my mind. And then New Orleans, it's just about the depth of talent. Like, I think Brandon Ingram, like, you can, people flip out over Jason Tatum, and granted, it's probably because his defensive upside is higher, but Ingram is, I believe, a year younger. Is he a year older? He's a year younger, right? Than Tatum? Maybe? We'll get back to you on that. He could be that type of guy. Like, I could see him efficiently averaging 27 or 28 points per game 2 years from now. And you pair that around Zion, who, I mean, I heard what you just said, and I sort of agree with it, but I kind of think he's just, if he stays healthy, he's going to be unstoppable. He is kind of young Shaq. And to me, the crazy thing with him, and what a lot of people underrate, is it's not just his overwhelming athletic ability. His touch around the rim is just, it's crazy. Like, I don't remember another young big having that kind of finishing ability, and it's a combination that, because of his athleticism, he can get a shot off at any time, and at these weird angles, it just falls in softly off the backboard, and it means that there's no way to really stop him. Like, what was it, 10 games in a row where he scored 20 straight points? Like, I just think he's going to be one of the most consistent offensive producers in modern NBA history. And you have those two, and you have such a variety of pieces. Plus, I think people forget they still have 4 more first-round picks coming from the Lakers. So there's just such a potential to upgrade at whatever spot they need, whether you want to attach those picks to Ingram or Jrue Holiday. Like, they have, as much as in Oklahoma City, the assets to make a trade for the next available star in the NBA. So that is something I'm taking into account as well. And that's my explanation on my top three. But I hear you. Again, if Giannis signed a 5-year contract, I'd be totally cool putting Milwaukee at 1.
Yeah, I think New Orleans, it's just like, I still haven't, like, seen it fully. Like, even with Dallas, like, they're going to make the playoffs this year. New Orleans looking more and more like they might not make the playoffs this season. So I would kind of want to see that for me to put them at number one already. But they definitely, like you mentioned, they have a ton of assets. They've got all those picks, and they have all the young guys. Like, they definitely are in a great spot. I'm not arguing that for sure.
All right, that's a good lukewarm place to wrap this podcast up. Marcus, I appreciate you sitting through this odyssey with me. We're going to go play basketball. Hopefully everyone stay safe out there. And we will be back over the weekend recapping Knicks Thunder. Until then, be good and enjoy the rest of your week.
Wash your hands.